Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm convening this meeting of the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. It's Friday, June 11th. Before we begin our agenda, could we please have a roll call for attendance?
Senator Finley.
Senator Finley, present by audio.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Wagner's present by video.
Co-Vice Chair Boquist.
Boquist on audio.
Co-Chair Burdick.
Present by video.
Representative Levy.
Levy by video, but I'm having problems, so it may go to just audio.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Excused.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Co-Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Co-Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Co-Chair Nathanson.
Present by video. And I'd like the committee staff to be aware that Representative Smith may be able to join us by audio. So if you see that connection trying to be made, please let him in. We have several items on our agenda today. I'd like to do the public hearing first. LRO, are we ready for a public hearing?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm opening the public hearing on Senate Bill 154A. LRO, please.
Co-chairs Nathanson, Burdick, members of the committee. Senate Bill 154A deals with the payment in lieu of tax on solar property. This there's currently a property tax exemption that allows the governing body of counties to enter into an agreement with the owner of a solar project, and that would relieve them of paying the property tax on the project. And then there's a payment in lieu of tax that's set at $7,000 per megawatt of nameplate capacity. So this extends the sunset to 2028. It adjusts the fee for that payment in lieu of tax to have a range of between $5,500 to $7,000 per megawatt. It also aligns the payment in lieu of tax distributions with the taxing districts in the code area where the property or project resides. Yeah, I think that's what I have for now. I'm here to answer questions.
Thank you. Committee, any questions for Ms. McGovern?
And this is, Madam Chair.
Yes.
This is a... this is an extension of an existing tax credit, correct? Or tax expenditure, correct?
Chair Burdick, this is a sunset extension with a few modifications. That's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. And Ms. McGovern, so we're going from $7,000 to $5,500 to $7,000, a range is what I understand. I'm just wondering who determines what that amount is. Is that the county commissioners or is it some other entity?
Yeah, Co-Chairs Nathanson, Burdick, Rep. Reschke. So this is a permissive program in itself anyway. So this is a negotiated range or negotiated amount. And so the governing body of the county would be able to negotiate that. And presumably if they couldn't come to an agreement, then they just wouldn't arrange a contract. Excuse me. And then there's the caveat that if the solar property sits within the city, then the county would have to consult with the city before working on a contract or an agreement.
Thank you.
Senator Findley.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. I would just like to say that when this bill came to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee a while back, there was a lot of discussion. It generated some great back and forth discussion and meetings with counties, AOC, and this amendment that has been adopted as a result of those discussions. All the counties in Eastern Oregon who have large tracts of land available for solar development have worked pretty tirelessly for the last 6 or 8 months with with AOC, and with the developers to reach some of these agreements that they got to. So there's been a lot of hard work. When we first started, this does not look like the original base bill, and it's been a lot of work to get where they got to. So I applaud all the work that's gone into it. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions or comments before we go to our witnesses who are signed up to testify? I'm not seeing any right now. We have two people signed up to testify on my list at the moment, Amanda Dalton and Angela Crowley-Cott. Amanda Dalton, please.
Hi, Co-Chair Nathanson and Co-Chair Burdick. Amanda Dalton, I am here on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties in support of the bill before you. I hate to spend more time than necessary, given the wonderful feedback you've just heard from your committee. But I do want to just briefly say that the bill before you, as Senator Finley mentioned, is the result of what I will sadly say really was months. I think we started the negotiations with all the stakeholders, which included the county commissioners and judges, the assessors, the cities, OSEA, Renewable Northwest, and the solar project developers. Probably last fall. I want to note that discussion and negotiation was never a do we want to extend it. It's really rather how do we do that and how can we make this program better. It's been a wonderful benefit, I think, both for the solar developers that you're going to hear more from Angela in a second about, but also for our counties. And as noted, it is an optional program. It does allow those commissioners to lead the negotiations. As staff noted, the bill before you really does three significant changes to the current program. One, that it just essentially says you need to address how land is going to be treated in the project. And so that has been done. It has also not been done. And so this is just kind of a clear flag to all parties that they need to make sure that that's addressed in the agreement. And you'll see that in section one. The next thing it does is, as noted by Representative Reschke, is it does establish both that floor and ceiling. As you can imagine, this was important to the commissioners and the solar developers for different reasons. But this was a number that we spent a lot of time on and is really important, I think, to both parties, to both provide that predictability, but also a little bit of consistency across the state while still allowing the locals to come in and maneuver based on what their local communities demand. And then finally, there's a small technical fix for the assessors that clarify that the fees are apportioned and distributed among the taxing districts that have jurisdiction over the property. And unfortunately, Eric Kanzler wasn't able to join this afternoon. He represents the assessors in these conversations. He did say to go ahead and share with you that they also support the bill and hope that you'll move it forward today. So I'm glad to answer any questions after you hear from Angela. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Angela, you're next.
Great. Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Angela Crowley-Cook. I'm the Executive Director of OSEA, the Oregon Solar Plus Storage Industries Association. And we also strongly support the extension of the pilot program in this bill and the changes that Amanda just laid out. And I'll just briefly note the reason why this is critical for solar development in Oregon is that having that set amount year after year really helps the solar companies take this package and take the project to the bank, and it gives them that certainty and the bank that certainty so that they can finance the project. So we really appreciate all the work that we've done with the Association of Oregon Counties and CREA, and would appreciate the support of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for testifying. Committee, any questions for the witnesses? I'll wait just a minute in case someone's trying to signal. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. Angela or Amanda, is there ability, because right now it's $7,000 per megawatt per nameplate capacity. Is there opportunity then to negotiate a rate that either declines or increases throughout the contract? Is that part of the reason for the floor and the ceiling?
I'll take a stab at that first, Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke. The reason why we had requested that the floor be lowered is that the cost of solar has decreased, which means that the project is making less revenue, which makes that $7,000 kind of out of date, I guess. But the range is important for the commissioners to have the ability to negotiate each project and really take into consideration the specificities of that county and that particular project. Whether or not they can change the rate through the term of the contract, I don't believe so, but it is a negotiation, so that Senator Finley shaking his head now. All right, I'm going to go with Senator Finley then and say I don't think so. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for these two witnesses? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. I'm wondering if you could just give me a little more understanding of what that phrase, explain how the land will be treated, means. What is expected out of that requirement?
I could maybe tackle that one, Co-Chair Nathanson and Burdick, Representative Marsh. It essentially just nods to both of the negotiating parties, so the commissioners and the project developer, if the land is included in the exemption, so the payment in lieu of. So if the land should be considered as valued against the fee, and whether or not it's taxed differently. So that's kind of essentially from some of our rural commissioners, maybe perhaps where that land is a little bit more valuable, they wanted to be able to have some flexibility to have that be part of the conversation.
Thank you. Treated vis-a-vis the tax, not vis-a-vis pesticides or cows or something else. Thank you.
LRO, are there any other witnesses who signed up since the time I printed this list?
Co-Chair Nathanson, there is not.
Okay, that completes the testimony for this bill. I'm waiting just another couple seconds to make sure I'm not cutting off any members who want to ask a question or say anything. I'm now closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 154. Now we're moving to three work sessions. And for those of you who are watching us doing our business this afternoon, we don't have all the paperwork finished for these bills. So we're anticipating presentations from LRO so that we understand the form of the bills right now, if there are any amendments, the contents of those amendments, and then ample time for committee conversation about these bills. But I'm not anticipating will not be asking for any motions or to take action unless something changes in the next hour, but I'm not expecting that either. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2433. Mr. Alanak.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, 2433 is the omnibus bill, and most of the tax expenditure or tax credit policies that you've heard, tax expenditure policies, there are a couple of non-tax credits that the committee's heard, are included in a dash 5 amendment. We just got that maybe half an hour before the committee met, so the dash 5 is uploaded, and we put together a summary table. So I'm waiting to see if Kyle wants to hop in here, Madam Chair, if that's okay with you, to kind of walk through the sections.
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yeah, so there, we don't have an SMS up in the meeting materials, but that wouldn't be as helpful as the table, I think, that actually walks through the amendment that we have in the dash five. So if you'd like, Madam Chair, I can share my screen and can just walk down through the sections that are in the dash five amendment and the policies.
Okay. Yeah, we would really appreciate it.
Okay, so bear with me for one moment here as I, let's see, try to share my screen here. Okay, if I can get this large enough that hopefully people can see it. Okay, is that, sorry to be asking a question here, but can you see that okay, Madam Chair?
I can, but I have on my special super duper computer glasses. But yes, I can't see it. And this is posted, right? So someone could bring this up in a different window or print it.
Yes, this is in the meeting materials, and it just, I think, titled it just dash five table or something to that effect. So yeah, okay. People bring that up as well if they want to see the individual numbers. But this is building off of a table that the committee saw, I think, first at the beginning, at the first committee hearing, listing the provisions. So it's similar in format, but now what we have is the original bills here that the committees have heard, had public testimony on, of the contents that are in the dash five amendment. So we now have the dash five, which is now the omnibus version. So you have the bill number and then the section number of the dash five amendment, and then the policy summary. So just moving down this list, we can see section one is the child with a disability credit. And this is one of your standard credits up for their sunset review this legislative session. So this is one of the 11 that started at the beginning of session that is up for its 6-year sunset extension. And that's what's contained in the bill here is a 6-year sunset extension of the child with a disability credit. Section two is a severe disability. So again, another 6-year sunset extension, no other changes. Sections 3 and 3A are the rural medical providers tax credit. So the committee heard a little bit about this. We do have a 6-year sunset extension here. And then also included, and I think this is the section 3A, is a modification to allow rural medical providers or physicians in these rural areas that are emergency room physicians to qualify for the credit regardless of their adjusted gross income. So right now the credit has a limit of $300,000, where if a rural medical provider is above $300,000 adjusted gross income, they cannot qualify for the credit. Now there are some exceptions existing for surgeons and obstetrics, I believe, and then this would be adding one more exemption for physicians practicing in the emergency room or working out of the emergency room would be allowed to earn more than that $300,000 and continue to qualify. And that changed the revenue impact, increased it by about $400,000 in the biennium for okay. Beginning of 20.
And before you move on to the next one, I'm going to call on Representative Reschke, and after that, Senator Burdick, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. And Mr. Easton, just in your table here, just for clarification, when you have a Senate bill number, comma, House bill number, are those identical bills? And so you're just referencing them, or are they, do they differ and we're just merging them together?
Yeah, Representative Reschke, sorry, I should have mentioned that up front. Yes, these are, in many cases, we introduced a bill for the sunset extensions of the credits in the House chamber and then one in the Senate chamber. So these will be nearly identical bills. Occasionally, there might have been something we caught on one side that could be a technical thing. I think we had one where we weren't extending the sunset, the full 6 years, only 4 years. But otherwise, these should be identical bills. Yeah.
Thank you.
Senator Burdick, and then Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the expansion of the rural medical providers to emergency physicians, is that there are several tiers of rural areas, and my intent in suggesting this was to limit it to frontier areas, which is the most rural. Is that how this is that how the revenue was computed on this, and is that how it's structured?
No, Madam Co-Chair, the way that it's in right now, it's written that it is not specific to those in a rural frontier county. So that we could make that change. I believe the last time I looked at that, that would put the expect to have that revenue impact then be a minimal by just narrowing it down to just those most rural of rural hospitals.
Yes, I would appreciate having that done. Thank you.
Representative Marsh. And after that, it might be Representative Reschke again. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was just bad hand management on my part. No questions.
Okay, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. Mr. Easton, so just on that, do you have an estimate of what an ER doctor, what they make in a year? Because I think it's pretty high, and I'm just wondering if just trying to get an understanding, are they always over 300,000 no matter where they work?
Yeah, Representative Reschke, I did have a conversation with the Office of Rural Health. I don't have any specific numbers for you, but yeah, from the conversation I had with them, they did describe a situation that you just described where there are instances, and this is generally going to be hospitals in, I guess, larger rural areas. They mentioned such areas as Coos Bay or something on those lines where, yeah, the pay might be higher than in other areas that are considered rural for purpose of this credit. So, yes, there definitely could be instances where you have, I guess, less rural areas, and there is generally an expectation that the pay is higher in those areas, yeah.
Thank you.
Senator Boquist, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there's a cap set on the rural medical tax credit too, in terms of salaries of doctors. I think that was established quite back, and since I was involved in that, I'm just curious to make sure, or is that in there still?
Yeah, Senator Boquist, that is the $300,000 cap, and that's what the provision, the change here in Section 3A is relating to, is bringing emergency room doctors into that group that's not subject to that cap. So whether they made $200,000 or $350,000, they would qualify for the credit.
Thank you.
And Representative Levy.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So, Kyle, Senator Boquist asked part of my question. My other part of that question is, it's my understanding that it has to do with the closer they are to a certain population number, that the credit isn't as much. So, like, my nearest hospital, I'm in the middle between Hermiston Hospital and Pendleton Hospital. Hermiston Hospital is approximately 28 miles from a larger hospital in the Tri-City area that serves a much larger population. And the Pendleton Hospital is approximately the same size as the Hermiston Hospital, where those funny kind of hospitals where we only have like 6 beds and we have to transfer everybody out. And their nearest hospital that is large size would be in Walla Walla, Washington. So both of the larger hospitals are out of state. But does that have to do with, does this also have to do with the population size of the nearest hospital? Or nearest, sorry.
Yeah, the credit itself is tiered at $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. And that does key off of your distance from a population center, but it doesn't take into account if there were 2 hospitals in a certain area. That's not specific in the bill. It is just how far you are from that population center The other conversation I had is just in some cases of what the salaries can be at those individual hospitals, and that can certainly vary, but the discussion at least I had with Rural Health was there can be instances where certain hospitals are more likely to pay above that $300,000, and you're less likely to see that in others.
In my area, those two hospitals are almost identical in population size for communities. So thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Chair Nathanson.
Sure. And Senator Burdick, did you have another question? Senator Burdick is muted. Could be her hand is up from the previous question. Kyle, Mr. Easton, why don't you move on to the next one, and we'll catch Senator Burdick in a minute.
Okay, Madam Chair. So moving then on to Section 4, this is the Public University Venture Development Funds credit. So this is a credit for contributions to these university venture development funds. This is one of your the standard six-year sunset extensions. Sections 5 and 5A have to do with the Working Family Dependent Care Credit. So Section 5 is the standard six-year sunset extension. And then Section 5A is from House Bill 2721, which the committee had a public hearing on last night. And that's related to the expansion of the Working Family Household Dependent Care Credit, directed at some of those lower, predominantly it's gonna be lower income students and how they qualify. So those are the two changes in there. And that's where you can see the baseline extension is about $32 million per year, and then we're expecting about $2.5 million per biennium for the expansion of the credit related to the students. Okay, and then the next section we move into is the IDA contributions tax credit. That's section 6-15, and this is most recently was heard, I believe, in the committee last night as well from House Bill 2551. So this is the bill that is, it's extending the six-year sunset. There's a slight modification to the timing of when these contributions can be made and how they qualify, and then some programmatic changes as well. And that's part of the reason you see so many sections being modified here is you have programmatic language that's being modified throughout the statutes that's specific to the IDA program. Section 16 is the Oregon Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association tax credit. This is another one that is getting just your standard six-year sunset extension. That was up for review this legislative session. And then we also have the Oregon Veterans Home Physician. That's picking up in Section 17. And again, this is just that six-year sunset extension without any policy changes to this credit. So the next grouping we get into here is moving away from the credits that are up for their standard sunset review. And then we have a few credits up next and some tax expenditures as well related that are not up for their standard six-year sunset review, but they are making modifications to existing tax expenditures. So the first we have is the Agricultural Workforce Housing Tax Credit. That's making an adjustment to the credit cap. And it's moving it from 3.625 million per year up to 16.75 million per biennium. So they're changing it from it's increasing overall, but it's also being changed from an annual limit to a biennial limit to give a little more flexibility to the Housing Community Services Department and how this credit works. Staying with the housing theme, up in sections 29 and 30 is the Affordable Housing Lenders Credit. So that's increasing the annual cap from 25 million to 35 million. So there's an existing cap. The sunset, I should mention, the sunset on the agricultural workforce housing and the affordable lenders credit is unchanged, but it is making changes to the cap, and that can have influence the usage of it. And that's reported here in the revenue impact table. And again, we're changing the cap of affordable housing lenders credit, increasing that from 25 million to 35 million. The committee's heard a little bit about this in the public testimony. As of right now, the use of this credit is below the cap. However, there is an expectation in the years coming in the near term, and a couple years down the road, that we will get closer to hitting that existing $25 million cap on the credits outstanding. And that's part of the rationale for lifting or increasing that cap, because without doing that, there is potential that we could be limiting the credit going forward. And that is reflective in the revenue impact statement you'll see as well, where by lifting that overall cap, we expect more credits to be used in the later biennia.
And before you move to the next topic, I want to ask Senator Burdick again, was your hand up for an earlier issue? Did you have a new question?
No, thank you. I will put my hand down.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Mr. Easton.
Okay, so moving on to section 31 and 34, and I guess we can talk about this is from House Bill 3244 and then Senate Bill 43, which covers two lines here. And these are all related to the Film and Video Office. So we have the first is related to the Film and Video Auction Tax Credit. There's two changes happening here. The first is it's increasing the annual cap of the credit from $14 million per year up to $20 million per year. And then we're extending the sunset has been extended for 6 years. So the annual cap on the credit is increased. That's about $6 million per year, and then it's extending that sunset as well. So there's two ways in which it increases the cost of the credit going forward. And that's reflective here in that we do expect use of this credit or this credit is purchased at auction for these auctions to continue being successful in years down the road with this six-year extension and the $6 million increase in what they can sell each year.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. And Mr. Easton, just on that fact, I see it going from 11.5 to, which is basically 1 year of auction sales, and then to 26.3 and then to 39 million. 39 is real close to 40. So are you, in your estimate here, are you thinking it's going to take time to ramp up for the film and video industry to sell the full allotment that they'll be, that will be available with this passage?
Yeah, Representative Reschke, so there's a couple dynamics going on here. And the reason that that ramps up to the 26.3 and the 39 million is we have the timing of the existing law sunset that I believe is January 1st, 2024. So that's midway through the 23-25 biennium. So that's where 23-25 we grab, yeah, the six and the, yes. So, okay.
Thank you. That's great.
Okay, and then from Senate Bill 43, we have the extension of the Film and Video Greenlight Labor Rebate Program. So that's a six-year extension there as well. So that's another funding source for the Film and Video Office that the committee has heard about. And then wrapping up the list here on the extenders and the existing tax expenditures we have is House Bill 2819.
Before you move on, Mr. Easton, I see Representative Levy to be recognized.
Let him finish talking because it's on this one. I just want to make sure I didn't miss it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. So, Madam Chair, this is building on, or I guess continuing the discussion from last night from House Bill 2819. This is the changes to the Oregon's Earned Income Tax Credit. Make an expansion there on who can qualify and take this credit to allow taxpayers that are using an individual taxpayer ID number who otherwise would qualify for the credit, but for that I-10, they can use the I-10 and claim the credit on their Oregon tax return. It does cover the Oregon portion of the credit. Of course, the federal amount of the credit, that's under federal law, so they'll be unable to claim that, but they can claim the Oregon portion, and Oregon's credit is a percentage of that federal credit amount.
Representative Levy.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Kyle, so it starts at 5.7, jumps to 11.9, drops to 6.1. Can you explain to me why the up the down?
Yeah, Representative Levy, that is, again, we have some sunset interaction here. So 5.7 million is when we get 1 year in the biennium of the credit. So its effective date is begins with 2022 tax year. So we'll only get one tax year in the first biennium. In 23-25, we'll then grab two tax years. So that's about $6 million for each of the years. And then in 25-27, we have an existing law sunset on the earned income tax credit that would be subject to this expansion portion of the credit as well. And that's why we only get one tax year of claimants in 25-27. So it cuts it roughly in half in that biennium.
I'm pretty sure you already told me that, but I'm having a blonde moment, so I apologize if you did.
It looks like we're ready to move on to the next section.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'm going to mention the skip to the two bottom portions, and then I'll hand things off to Mazen, who can mention sections 44 through 48. But just the scroll down here. The bottom two portions here are just related to, this is the film and video auction tax credit and then their labor rebate. And so the ways that the auction credit and the labor rebate work is they're really designed to be a funding source for the film and video office. And that's where you see, you'll see the cost of the credit and the labor rebate up here. And then down in the lower portion here is where you see the positive fund transfers from the sale of the credits to either the OPIF fund or the Goler fund. So these are positive dollar amounts meant to illustrate that's where the when you sell a tax credit, the funding then goes to the film and video office. So that's where the positives are. And with that, I see Mazen here. So I'll go ahead and, unless there's questions on that piece, I'll go ahead and hand it off to him to finish up the table here.
Yeah, Mr. Malik, let's hear from you.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the Joint Committee, the section 44, just to go on, includes the discussions that you had on both Senate Bill 157 and House Bill 2445, and those are the ones that talk about the explicit sunset for the medical marijuana, and that goes from January 1st, 2022 till the 2028, and you have 2021-23 biennium with primarily 18 months of a credit or of exemptions, and then you would have the 23-25 and 25-27 about that level. Senate Bill 102 is included in section 45 and 48, and that's for the transient lodging tax that you heard from the military department on yesterday, and this is not expected to have any large amounts. This is a minimal impact because we have not seen, or we believe there is a practice at this time of actually having those included in the transient lodging tax amounts and just excluding them from what is subject to the tax. Would probably not have an impact, but it would be part of the legislative policy from now on.
Thank you. Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is on the Dash 5. If I read this Dash 5 correctly, this is the omnibus bill that we're going to be looking at that will include the tax expenditures we're going to move forward this year. I guess I'm disappointed if the omnibus is going to be the only vehicle that we move them forward for, because there are bills on here that were heard in a public hearing yesterday. There were bills, so we have continued public hearings, we have continued work sessions, but I guess if the soup is already cooked, then why are we continue to have other entrees prepared? I guess. So maybe I'm misreading that, Madam Chair, and is my impression is the soup is cooked. Here's the omnibus bill. Unless we're going to have the omnibus bill plus others to deal with tax credits to go on, then some of the others, and even the tax credits that don't go, such as the solar credit we had talked about earlier today, it's not on the list. It does not affect the general fund. It does not affect others. It affects counties. So I guess, am I overinterpreting this, Madam Chair? Is the soup cooked or is it still in the kitchen?
The soup's in the kitchen, Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. I and I and 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 I just wanted to make sure that there's still an opportunity to add ingredients in the cooking. I would prefer, because I really like the omnibus component, because it's tax expenditures at a glance, because they're all included in there, and it's very easy. My concern was that the dash five was posted, so my concern is that it was cooked. So I appreciate your comment. Thank you.
And I'll add a little bit more detail. Since we're talking about adding maybe some potatoes, carrots, and parsley, or not, this list of this omnibus in this amendment with all these components, these are tax expenditures that exist currently. In a couple of minutes, in a few minutes, when we're done with committee discussion on this big bill, this omnibus bill, we have two more work sessions scheduled on things that we heard previously. Those are for entirely new ideas. So Senator Burdick and I had met and asked Mr. Allenack to prepare the omnibus bill that you see now, I mean this big amendment for an omnibus bill, but recognizing that it's possible that these two wholly new tax credits could get added to an omnibus bill. And we don't have paperwork ready for any of it. And since we're waiting for paperwork and have to do another meeting anyway, then Mr. Allenack's staff will just have to do more paperwork if we add anything to the big bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I truly appreciate that. Thank you. And I do like carrots and parsley in my soup.
Any other questions or discussion on this pot of soup on 2433? I'll wait just a minute to make sure I've scanned for hands up and down the list. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson, and I won't try to attempt to continue the analogy, so I'll just put my vice chair cook hat off to the side. Just wondering, I think the dash two on this that the dash five replaces or would replace had the EIP fix payments in there. I was just wondering if we were still considering that or not.
They are not part of this big omnibus. You have noticed. Yes. They're not included. There hasn't been a way to get it done.
All right. Thank you.
I'm not seeing anything else right now. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2433. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2737.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, so House Bill 2737, the committee heard this last night, and this is relating to the AmeriCorps, the personal income tax subtraction for AmeriCorps National Service Education Awards received. So we do have some information up in OLIS for you as well, the revenue impact on this one and such.
Thank you. So this might be one of those carrots or potatoes. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nathanson. And Mr. Easton, do we have data on the salary or the earnings, I guess would be a better way to say it, of folks that are participating in this program and then would use this tax advantage. I recall, and maybe I'm wrong, but I recall, I think it was Senator Wagner had some questions about means testing and so forth, and that brought to my mind whether we knew what the average income of somebody who would take advantage of this tax credit or deduction would be. So I don't know if you have that or not.
No, Representative Reschke, that's not information that I have in front of me there. I did look at some of the other states. I think Minnesota was one leaned on, but their information they publish in their tax expenditure report doesn't go into that granularity. So no, I don't have any distributional potential use of this by a distribution of income or anything along those lines, no.
And just a quick follow-up, Co-Chair Nathanson. Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Easton, then the other question is how do other states approach this? You mentioned Minnesota. So is it usually through a grant program or a tax credit, or did you discover how other states are doing this sort of thing?
Yeah, Representative Reschke, I think the income tax subtraction or an exemption from income or an exclusion is just the way that the other states have done it as well. Of course, it can vary in the value based upon an individual state's income tax system. But of course, yes, that is, I think that's the most straightforward way through the tax system, at least, is just allow the taxpayer to not include it on their income if it is there on their federal return.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm going to take a turn here with a comment of my own. The way I look at this, and I would welcome Mr. Easton or Mr. Allenack correcting me if I'm mistaken, we don't ask people to add on scholarships or grants for colleges and universities as income. So the way I'm looking at this, this just helps people who've worked really hard earning a not very high wage at all with AmeriCorps. It's more like, well, anyway, the people who've it's like sweat equity in a way. They've put in their time with AmeriCorps and then they get an educational award. This would be putting them on a par with people who are getting a lot larger awards for grants and scholarships for colleges and universities who aren't being taxed on that. Is that correct? I'm just picturing this as an equity issue, frankly.
Yeah, so Madam Chair, with the scholarship programs, it can be a little nuanced. It's so many times we say in taxation, it seems to answer a question as it depends. But yeah, in this case, where the IRS a lot of times will fall on this is, if the scholarship program falls more into a compensation manner, so if it's, we see this in employee scholarship programs as well from an employer, in that case, if it's looked at as more of a top up of income or an extra incentive or some way compensating the individual, that's where it then falls into that bucket where it's generally gonna be subject to taxation. And that's compared to a scholarship of, say, you qualify for it as maybe it's need-based or awarded, but is open to everybody to apply for, rather than, in this case, maybe the example is it's earned by providing some level of service.
Thank you. I was also wondering, these education awards are really small amounts compared to the amount of some college scholarships. Is that right?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think from the annual report that I looked at most recently, I think the overall average is about $4,000 was the value of these for a year now.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. I think I saw Rep. Pham and then Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question actually, it was or thoughts were similar to yours, and my question was answered. So okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess let me expand upon what you were saying, Madam Co-Chair. I believe the average salary for AmeriCorps member for them to live on when they're after they have done or when they're doing this service, much like military service, is $1,406 a month, which is, I don't know, somewhere about 50 cents on the dollar of minimum wage after they go through this. And then the second point of this is that then these same type of volunteers, just like if they had volunteered for the military, many of the military educational benefits are paid directly to the colleges, and of course they don't have to pay taxes on that. So really, you know, the AmeriCorps, this program for AmeriCorps is really putting individuals on the same footing we treat people who've served in the military, except that the AmeriCorps people have probably earned half as much money and the benefits are about a quarter. So I'm really surprised anybody even joins the AmeriCorps, frankly, at this deal. But I mean, so I think the notion, the whole idea of means testing is just, you know, surprising to me, because at $1,406 a month for the multiple years they have to do to get this benefit, I can't imagine they went out and got $100,000 a year job or something out of this. I think this is actually a good step forward to try and create, as the volunteer commission has said, try and get more people to volunteer in the communities. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Anybody else? Well, we can't take action on any of these today, but it would be good, I think, to figure out if the committee is interested in moving this bill along, either individually or adding it into the omnibus bill. Not quite sure how to do that because we're not doing motions and we're not moving bills, but
Madam Chair, my hand is up, Senator Boquist here.
I see you now. Thank you, Senator. Go ahead.
I guess the question of staff. I mean, there's a fiscal posted and a revenue posted already, and there's no amendment to the bill. So am I correct from staff that what we see is what we get on OLS right now?
Yes, Senator, we do have the paperwork on this bill. That is true, yes.
But we also could put it into the omnibus bill, which...
Well, so let me ask, my hand's up.
Oh, and I don't see it yet. Thank you. Go ahead.
What we could do is vote on it and then... not advance it, but just include it in the omnibus bill for next week. We could actually probably do that with both bills, I would think. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle or Chris, would that be a violation of our process to take a vote on it, but not move them forward, but know that we can include them in the omnibus bill?
Madam Chair, this is Chris Hellenic. I'm not sure what the vote would be, because those votes would be to move the bill.
Yeah.
So there can be discussion here, and if there's desire among the committee members, we can get another amendment drafted. And that was the larger intent for this discussion is, okay, we have a new or an updated version of the omnibus amendment, the dash five. According to my notes, we're already looking at one change to the dash five related to the ER positions. And so these two other bills are kind of in the mix for how does the committee want to move forward with these various policies.
Representative Marsh and then Senator Wagner.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I would just pipe up to express my support for incorporating the bill into the larger omnibus. I think the cost is minimal, a couple hundred thousand dollars perhaps. And I think it's a really important statement of affirmation from the state in terms of the importance of these AmeriCorps positions and the contributions that the participants make to our communities.
Thank you. Senator Wagner.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Nathanson. My preference, since we're getting sort of a sense, what we used to say in school board terms, a sense of the board, apparently here, loosely, is to have straight up votes on new tax expenditures. So my preference would not be to necessarily roll these into an omnibus, but to have the opportunity to vote in series on them. So if you're looking for where to go, my preference would be to hold off until we have all the paperwork and then put each individual measure up for a vote.
And from the House's perspective, the fewer bills that we have to make sure that we're reducing the load on both chambers, the fewer bills, the better, if we, to the extent that we can combine them. That would be my preference, but as you're saying, to get a sense of the board, we need to hear from everybody to help advise Senator Burdick and me how to manage this over the next few minutes and few hours and next week. Let's see, Senator Boquist, you're next.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll help you. I'm in favor of it and the paperwork exists, so there you go.
Thank you.
Okay, let's see, hand up.
Yes, go ahead. Representative Reschke, then Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I would just echo the comments of Senator Boquist and or Representative Marsh. So I'm in favor of moving forward with this.
Thank
one
you.
Way
one way or the other. Okay. And next with Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm in favor of moving the AmeriCorps bill forward.
Thank you.
I guess I think it would be good to see if anybody has any objections to it.
Yeah, let's see. I do see Rep. Valderrama had her hand up. Rep. Valderrama, what were you going to make a comment?
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. I was just going to say that I support it moving forward. I don't have any objections. Just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. Rep. Pham, I see your hand is up.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I did also, I had my thumbs up sign, but I just thought I would articulate that I do support moving it into the omnibus.
Yes, thank you. Because we don't know whether everyone has access to video as well as audio, it is a good idea for us to make sure we say verbally what our intentions are or what our votes are. So I appreciate that. Thank you. Representative Levy.
I would move it forward as well.
And I would for the House. We haven't heard from everyone on the Senate side yet. Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support the AmeriCorps bill, and I would like to get it move as far along as we possibly can with it. So I support the measure. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think we have a sense, kind of, sort of. Senator Burdick and I will take all this under advisement. Let's see. It looks like Representative Smith has joined us. If someone could let him in. Good afternoon, Representative Smith.
You are so kind to let me in. Thank you. Thank you. I think I've missed a couple votes.
We're not voting on anything at this time. You've joined us as it looks like we're getting toward the end of a conversation about the bill about a new subtraction from federal taxable income for the AmeriCorps Educational Award.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for your kindness. I will go on mute and participate when needed. Thank you.
I know that you're at a disadvantage here because you haven't heard the conversation, but if you did already have an idea whether you favored this or not, the members have been sharing whether they liked it or not.
You know, Chair Nathanson, I've had a chance to participate in earlier conversations, and I think this is a fabulous opportunity to assist and recruit and help benefit our AmeriCorps volunteers.
Okay, thank you. So, Senator Burdick, you and I will be able to reconnoiter about this as we plan our agenda for the next meeting.
Well, I think we have a sense that we want to put this into the omnibus bill. I'm not hearing anything otherwise. And okay. For your objectives of keeping the number of bills down, I do have concerns about 3302.
Could we take that? Let me close this work session first, and then can I put you first in line for the next one?
Sure.
Thank you. I think there's, I'm not seeing any other hands for 2737, the AmeriCorps Service, National Service Educational Award Bill. Gone. Okay, I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2737. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3302A, and immediately after a brief presentation from LRO, I'd like to hear from Senator Burdick first.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3302, just a refresher. This, you heard this bill just last night, and this is the creating an income tax credit that would be available to individuals and corporations that make contributions to a tax-exempt workforce training organization. We do have the -A3 amendment that just modifies, that basically removes Department of Justice from being required to certify the credit.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have concerns over this tax credit, nothing personal against the tax credit. I just have a high threshold for approving new tax credits. This one does not meet my threshold. And if others are somewhat in doubt, I would suggest that we do take this one up separately.
Senator Wagner, I saw your hand up.
No, I was just going to support Senator Burdick's statement on that. I'd like the opportunity to consider this one, as I said before in series. It's a new measure that I think deserves appropriate consideration separate from rolling this into an omnibus.
Okay. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Co-Chair Burdick and Senate Majority Leader Wagner. I understand that concern. I know those who were around when Betsy happened are really concerned about new tax credits, and I appreciate that lens because we certainly don't want to ever have anything like that again. I'll just make a quick pitch here that I tried to narrow the scope of this really, really small. It's $400,000 per biennium, I think is what Mr. Easton estimates. And it's really mostly a marketing thing for these job training centers, because right now you can donate to a job training center and get a deduction. Because it's a nonprofit job training center, you can get the deduction. What this does is it says, well, just for a certain amount, you could use it as a tax credit, as opposed, you can't do a tax credit and the deduction, you can do one or the other with the up to the limit specified. So this was mostly to help my organization Klamath Works here in Klamath Falls, as they're trying to retrain folks to, just learn some really basic job skills in order to be employable But I tried to make it apply to any organization statewide that fits the narrow criteria, not just for Klamath Works. But that's the kind of the thinking behind this tax credit. And again, because you can already get a deduction by donating to these nonprofits, getting a tax credit is more of a more of a marketing ploy, as opposed to if it were a for-profit entity you were donating to or giving money to and then getting a credit off, then I could see where there'd be some bigger concerns.
I'm just
going to say that the dash A3 amendment. So initially I had the Department of Department of Justice to certify the organizations. And when I worked through with them, I found out really quickly that the cost of setting that up would be more than the tax credit itself. So it was starting to double the expense to the state. So when I found out that the number was pretty low, I went along with the same thing we did on Senate Bill 119, which was when somebody donates a work of art, they had to turn in their paperwork to the Department of Revenue, the receipt to show that they did that. Now they don't have to do that. They just have to hold the receipt in case there's an audit. And so I took that approach with this in the dash A3. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. You know, I want to associate my comments with Senator Burdick and Senator Wagner. When I looked at original concept of a tax credit for workforce, I thought, well, why are we giving profitable companies, you know, a cheap option to hire folks? The thing I'd share with this committee, though, is in the world I work in of economic development, this tax credit actually helps those who right on the margin of a company's not sure they really want to hire them for one reason or another. Maybe they lack the necessary skills. Maybe they've had a little bit of visitation with the Department of Corrections. Maybe there's another reason that the company doesn't want to bring them on. And this helps induce them to try and make it work. And so, again, I understand the reluctance. If this was to help Intel bring employees in, I'd be like, no. But really what this is to help those folks who need a hand up, get a hand up, and to help and to have those companies who are willing to take a little bit of a risk to give them a little bit of reward. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Did I see Rep. Pham's hand up a minute ago?
Yes, Madam Chair, I did have a question, but I think I answered my question about the tax credit versus the deduction that they would normally get. Put my hand down.
Thank you. Senator Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I guess what I would say is that with the change in 2013, when we established tax credits with a sunset date out at 6 years out, it gives us an opportunity to adequately review and evaluate whether it meets the objectives of what we're doing. This is a program that appears to be pretty darn good. It appears to go after a workforce that certainly needs some help to move them up and over the threshold and of pure independence, you know, towards independence. And I think it's a great thing. Will it work? Ask me in 6 years and I'll tell you all about it. But I think, you know, we're not sitting someplace in hard stone forever. This is on parchment paper that's only going to, you know, destroy itself within 6 years unless we renew it. So I think this has a good opportunity. I would certainly love to see the pure fiscal that's attached to it. Representative Rusky talks about the numbers. They look good. But I would think this program certainly has a tremendous amount of merit because we're all struggling with workforce throughout the state, and whatever we can do to help, I believe we should try. So I would love to see all the fiscal and all the paperwork, and let's put this near the stove where the pot is cooking. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Senator Finley, for that. That was very kind and very subtle. I appreciate that. Yeah, the one thing I like about, so I had a tax credit that was up for renewal here, a tax credit I was able to get passed in 2017 for a tax credit for companies if they trained their workforce at a community college. And that didn't get taken up very much. The numbers on that were really dismal. And so I said, that thing doesn't look like it's working very well. Let's just let that slide this time, and it's going to sunset. So what I like about tax credits, and like what Senator Finley says, is we kind of give it a six-year trial. And if we put sideboards on it, as former Chair Barnhart used to always say, where are the sideboards? Then I think that trying new things is okay, as long as we make sure that we keep the expense low. And again, it can help a community. So this is kind of my next idea. And the neat thing about tax credits is it doesn't cost the state anything if nobody takes it up. And if there are too many people that take it up and it gets really expensive, I'll be the first one in line to put a cap on it or something else, because that's not my intent. My intent's just to help with a little more sweetener. That's it. Thanks.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate this this idea and this approach to support workforce development centers. I guess as somebody who's constantly also being approached by really worthy nonprofits like Habitat for Humanity or the Food Bank in terms of trying to increase donations, my concern is that we would be setting a precedent that other people would say, well, why don't we give tax credits to our really worthy, important nonprofits? I'm curious if there's, Reprashki, have you thought about giving this through a direct grant program to support workforce development centers and the benefits that you see by taking this tax credit approach?
I don't know, Reprashki, did you want to respond?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I think it's just a difference in philosophy. And when you do grant programs, and you got to stand something up. And so that's going to cost money to the state, as well as then the money that's going to go through the system and go to whatever agency, then it's going to go to the workforce training center. This is a direct way to say, if somebody was, like Representative Smith said, is on the fence, what they want to do with their money, their disposable income, and they say, I'd like to give it. No, I can get a tax credit. Maybe that sounds better to them, and so they do it. So it's just kind of a different way of getting at it, but then you don't have to stand anything up. We already have the Department of Revenue. If it's a tax credit and they put it down as such, then the system's already set up to do that.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Kyle, I just have a question about the effective date. The bill says the effective date is January 2021 through January 2031. Is that the carry forward, or where does the 6 year that gets us to 31? Can't quite do the math there, but is this bill on the normal 6 year cycle?
Representative Marsh. No, it doesn't have a six-year sunset. That is the sunset of through January 1st, 2031. So that is specified. If a sunset is not specified, we do have that implicit sunset that gets placed on there of 6 years. And then I think 6 years has become a standard, but certainly it's whatever is specified in the legislation will dictate the length of the credit and its availability.
So just to be totally clear, it's 10 years as currently written. So that might be something, should we want to move this forward, that we could adjust, because it does seem like it should be on the regular six-year cycle.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I agree. Originally, the draft was for 10 years, and it should be on the six-year. So if the committee's wanting to move it forward, then I would make sure that that's on the regular cycle.
So I'm waiting to see other hands, just to make sure I'm not missing one in the attendee list instead of the There we have Rep. Marsh still with a hand up. Is that again or leftover? We can't hear you.
Thank you. I'm failing my technology here. It was a leftover, but I do have another comment. Should Rep. Reschke amend the bill for the 10-year cycle? The other part of the bill that gives me some hesitation is the carry forward. I think when you make these tax credits more complex, it just gets you into more trouble. I would rather see it a one-year tax credit over and done.
Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And Representative Marsh, I could do that. That would be fine. So again, I want to make it simple, narrow. Let's give it a try, see if it works or not, and then adjust accordingly. But I appreciate those comments.
So before putting legislative counsel and legislative revenue office in the position of knowing what to work on, I wonder if it would be agreeable with the committee, as we did before, and as the senator suggested, it's like getting a sense of the board. Could we just sort of go around and around the virtual table and get a sense of the interest in this so that we know what to prepare for at our next meeting? Senator Findley.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think it's a great idea. I like the tweaks. I'm not going to call them amendments because we're not there yet, but I like the tweaks suggested and agreed to by Representative Reschke. So I would support that as an opportunity to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Levy.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. It would be a great deal. It would work really good for my area. And so I would like to see it move forward with the suggested tweaks, as Senator Findley called them. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. With the changes suggested, I would support the bill.
Senator Wagner.
Yeah, I would just again ask that this measure be voted on separately. I'm sorry that if that's an inconvenience to the staff, I think that it's a different conversation in establishing a new tax expenditure. So I would just appreciate the opportunity to engage in that at that time. So,
Senator Wagner, I hope this doesn't complicate things for you, mm-hmm. but to understand whether we should even schedule this for a subsequent meeting, I'd like to get a sense of the group, how many people seem to favor it or don't favor it. If a majority favor it, then I believe Senator Burdick and I would want to put it on the agenda for, as you put out, as you suggested, a vote, a separate vote. Yep. But then again, if there's not majority support, that wouldn't be necessary. I'm trying to just get a sense of, are people tending to want to consider it or not want to consider it?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Chair Burdick, at this time, I would not be supporting this measure as drafted, if that gives you a clear enough sense.
Thank you. That's really helpful. Senator Riley.
I'm of the same opinion. I'm not able to support this this bill as the way it's drafted now. I'm just not leaning towards supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Rep. Marsh? Okay. Rep. Valderrama?
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. I am supportive with the proposed amendments or tweaks that we've been discussing.
Thank you. Anyone else to help give guidance to Senator Burdick and me? Senator Burdick.
Yes, Madam Chair, as I said at the beginning, I am not supportive of this bill at this time. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else want to? Oh, Representative Smith, I see your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Nathanson. And again, I understand the concerns of our several of our senators, but for my knowledge of workforce development and how that plays with recruitment of business and creating jobs, I'd be right on board with them. But with that said, I would associate with Representative Marsh and her comments. Let's give this a try. Let's see what happens. Let's evaluate it when we come back in the next biennium. If it's working, great. If it's not, it hasn't cost us anything. And let's just take a shot at it, but with the parameters that Representative Marsh raised. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the cap. I think that relieving. I still have some concerns that we have to look at the larger ecosystem of nonprofit contributions and the effects it has on others. I can see where what we consider effective and that people are taking it up and supporting workforce centers may actually move people from giving to another worthy cause, because if they give to a workforce center, they get a 100% tax credit. So it may potentially diminish other gifts. So I guess that's what I'm kind of still thinking through. I think, you know, at 400,000, that limit I have less concerns about, but I just, the principle of it is something that I'm still wrestling with.
Thank you. Let's see. Representative Smith, I see your hand up. I'm not sure if that was a leftover.
Definitely a leftover. Apologize, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'll wait another few minutes to see if anyone wants to get in the queue who hasn't been in yet. Okay, I'm not seeing any more hands. Thank you for the conversation. It looks like that completes the conversation on House Bill 3302. Oh, let's see, Rep. Pham, is your hand up again?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I did have a question to clarify. I heard that there's a cap at 400,000 per biennium, but I might have confused that with the revenue impact. Is there a cap for this tax credit at 400,000 per biennium? Okay, I'm seeing Rep. Breschke nod no. So it could potentially be much larger than 400,000 per biennium. Thank you.
And with that, I think that does complete calling on everyone who had a hand up. So I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3302A. That completes the work on everything we had scheduled for our agenda today. We will have another meeting. It's just not absolutely certain when it will be. We would like to schedule it as soon as possible. It's somewhat possible that could be as soon as Monday. Our regularly assigned times are on next Thursday and Friday, if I've been tracking the schedule accurately. Mr. Alanak, is Thursday and Friday the most likely already scheduled time for this group?
You are correct, Madam Chair, that those are the regular times. However, I think there might be a problem with the Thursday. I need to check with the floor schedules that just came out. That's the thing that's the potential interruption with the committee work, is the changing floor session. So that's the one caveat, but you are right. Thursday and Friday are the normal times, normal day times, but the floor sessions can interrupt that.
Okay, well, everybody, please just stay tuned. Watch the posted schedules and your email accounts for notices. Mr. Alanak, is there anything else to talk about before we adjourn for the day?
I think you've covered everything, Madam Chair.
Okay. To all of the Senate and House members of this joint committee, thank you very much for your courtesies and patience with me as we got through the agenda. We're adjourned.
Bye-bye. Have a safe weekend.